am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Hello, everybody, on this wonderful July 8th. It's a beautiful day. I am now in Sutherland, Oregon. That's Southern Oregon, down by Roseburg. I left Arizona a couple of days ago and drove on through, went through the beautiful Utah landscape. Actually, it rained almost all the way from Arizona through Utah into Nevada. And my last day of driving, which was yesterday, and then I arrived here, I was able to, it was a beautiful sunny day. So today is a gorgeous sunny day as well, and it was 64 degrees a little while ago. Absolutely delightful as far as weather is concerned. I just slept beautifully and was able to breathe, had the window open, the fan going. It was just delightful to be away from that hot area. So I'm really happy. I got a good night's sleep, and for the first time in actually several weeks, because it was cool enough to be able to sleep. So I want to thank you all for joining us today. We have two guests today. Chris Steinis, who is the founder of Women of Wisdom out of Seattle, the Women of Wisdom Conference, and Sylvia Braglia, who is with us on the phone also. And Sylvia is the I'm going to let her tell you about herself, okay, pretty soon. So I want to take care of a little housekeeping issues, and I need to get Chris to call in. So anyway, here we go. Today is July 8th. This is Purpose Talk Radio, and I am your host, Jan Revelle. I'm staying with friends here, and my mic keeps slipping around, so let me try and get it fixed. There we go. And they all just left to do some winery tours while I get to be here in the nice, cool breeze and talk with you. I'm pretty excited about that, actually. I want to remind you that our theme song is I Am Who I Am, and it's by the group True Trinity. You can find True Trinity at, of all places, TrueTrinity.com, where you can find that song, I Am Who I Am, as well as another wonderful song called Be the Difference. And you can listen to them, you can download them, you can purchase them. They're only $1 a piece, which is absolutely fabulous in my opinion, and you can listen to them anytime you want. Let me see, what else? Oh, how to get in touch with me. My name is Jan. I think I've told you that before, and you know that. And my address to contact me is jan@purposetalkradio.com. You can also go to purposetalkradio.com, click on the guests link, and it will take you to show all the guests of who have been on the show, as well as upcoming guests. And remember, this is week 4 in the 13-week series of Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, Contemporary Women Spiritual Leaders. We know there are all kinds of spiritual leaders, men and women, and this one deals with contemporary women spiritual leaders. So it's very exciting for me to be bringing them to you. They're all featured in the book called the same name, Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, and that book is due to be published. It's an MP3 book with content, obviously, and it will be coming out September/October. But it's in the process right now, and it's very, very exciting to be able to finally bring this to fruition and to life. So today I've drawn 2 cards. I've also drawn 4 extra cards. So if you would like to have a reading following the interviews, you're welcome to call in. That number to call is 347-205-9074. Chris, if you're listening, that's the number to call in, 347-205-9074. And you'll be here with us real shortly. Cindy, I'm sorry, I don't know what that number is. Anyway, here we go, and we've got to have some callers. Again, I'm sorry, we're a little bit confusing here. I'm waiting for Chris to call in, and I think there was an email that she sent me, and I wasn't able to get online until like minutes ago to be able to call her and let her know. So, Chris, if you're listening, the number's 347-205-9074. And right now I want to move on to the cards. I drew two cards today for the show, and there are four extra cards. So, again, if you'd like a reading following the interviews, you're welcome to call into that phone number, and I'll be glad to do a reading for you. The first two cards, it was kind of a surprise that there were two of them that showed up. We'll see how they relate to the show. The first one is called Little Gerda. Little Gerda is one we've had before. Actually, they're both cards we've had before, and they're both, I think, totally beautiful and appropriate to this show. Little Gerda is from a fairy tale. Do you remember the story of the Ice Queen? That's it, the Ice Queen. And Peter is Little Gerda's friend, young friend. And they lived in a tenement building way above the city. And they lived across from each other. They had a little messaging system so they could, you know, the little tin cans with the wire, so they could talk to each other. And they were best of friends. And one day the Ice Queen came by. And the Ice Queen had, they called her that because there was these ice shards. A piece of ice would break like glass does into little shards, and it would sometimes get into somebody's eye, and all they could see from that point on and recognize from that point on was the negative. They couldn't see the beauty and the love anymore. All they could see was where people were doing them wrong and where things were not good anymore. Well, one day Peter was out walking around, and one of these ice shards got into his eye. And he turned from this loving friend to Gerda to somebody who really couldn't think of anything good about anything. The weather was terrible, people were terrible, and all kinds of things were going on that were bad. One of the beautiful things that they had between each other was a rose. And for Gerda, the rose was the symbol of their friendship and the love that was between them. And this was not a romantic love. This was a love of friends. Well, when Peter got this shard in his eye, and he could only see the negative. One day the Ice Queen was driving by, and she was the only thing he saw that was beauty. And so she took him up into her sleigh, and they drove off to her castle in the far north that was very isolated, and he lived with her. Well, Gerda went looking for him, and when somebody told her what had happened with Peter, she went after him. And she took the symbol of the rose with her. And along the way, there were these two Oriental women who befriended her and said that they would help her. They would help her when she got to the Ice Queen's castle, and they would help her find Peter. And this picture shows little Gerda holding a rose and sitting in a garden that is obviously a Japanese garden with these two young Japanese women who are with her. One of them has a hand up, is bent over a little bit and has a hand on Gerda's knee, and the other one is standing behind her and has her hands showing energy. These are women who are giving love to Gerda to help her on her way to find the love of her life, her friend Peter. And this, again, is not necessarily a romantic love. This is the love of a friend, a true love that has come from infancy all the way through to today. So remember that when you are on the search for love, whether it's for a friend or for yourself, and we need to be our own best friend, use the symbol of the love that's there for you, whether it's a rose or something else that you find is a symbol for you of love, and bring that with you everywhere. Incorporate it into your daily life in whatever way that you can, whether it's something on your mirror, whether it's a picture, something on your altar, whether it's a color that you wear, it doesn't really matter. Remember to bring that symbol with you. And the interesting thing is that the second card is called the White Rose. So there's a rose in both of these pictures. And the White Rose shows a young woman standing, leaning somewhat against the wall of a window. This is an old castle type place where the walls are very wide, and she's leaning against the arched window frame. The scene behind her is bleak and barren. The trees have no leaves on them whatsoever. It's nighttime. Everything is kind of gloomy and dark outside. Right beside her on the windowsill is this white rose that is just glowing. It's absolutely beautiful. But this young woman, even though she's dressed in royal garb, she's got a beautiful robe on or dress on that's in reds and has green and yellow and blue in it. Even so, she can't see anything outside of herself. She's looking strictly within. She doesn't even see the rose beside her, and that rose is glowing. But all she can see is the darkness that has come from outside and has come within. So remember in your life, no matter how dark it is, no matter how dark outside, no matter how dark inside, there is that white rose that's there shining and glowing, and all it needs is for you to open your eyes, turn your head just a little bit, and see that white rose that's the symbol of love, self-love, and love for others. Those are the cards for today. I want to remind you to go to Facebook, to our group called Purpose Talk Radio. Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, and request to join the group, and Cindy will make sure that you are included in the group, where you can have conversations, ongoing conversations that are taking place already, that take place during the show and following the show. And I want to thank you all for joining us again today. So we have a couple of callers coming in, and I've asked Cindy to please check on them to make sure. Maybe Chris is one of them. I don't remember your phone number, Chris. I hope it's you. So in the meantime, I'm going to bring Sylvia onto the line, and Sylvia is going to start the show. Whoops. Wait a minute. I got Cindy instead. Oops. Sorry about that. I think I've lost Sylvia. So we'll just check one of these other callers. This is caller area code 510. Hi, this is Jan. You're on the line. Who's this?
Hey, you got Sylvia.
All right. Oh. Good. I'm glad I got you. Hi, Sylvia.
Well, yes, I'm so happy to be here, Jan.
Well, I have to say that today is Mercury must still be retrograde because
until the 25th, quite firmly.
Gosh. Well, I'm visiting with some friends, and usually I can connect to their internet without any problem whatsoever. And today it just wasn't happening. And one of them, their son is visiting, and he tried to download Skype onto his computer, and it just wasn't going to happen. So I came into their office, and I am using my friend's computer. Thankfully, we were able to download Skype easily, and things are moving along. However, I still have to get a hold of Chris. So Sylvia, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to please tell us about yourself and tell us a little bit about how you found your passion, what your passion is, and then keep talking for a little bit so that I can find Chris's phone number and get her on the line with us, okay?
No problem.
I'm going to turn this show over to you for a few minutes, and thank you very much.
Well, to all of you who are out there, my name is Sylvia Brolier, and I am the founder of the Shama Soma Method, which is a school for somatic hypnotherapy, shamanic hypnotherapy, and I also have a mystery school called the Tantric Shamanism Mystery School. I love the work that I get to do, and one of my primary focuses is on the power of loving kindness to create healing and transformation, and how essential that is to come home to oneself and to others in this place of compassion, because I think empathic awareness and being be able to develop one's emotional intelligence is essential not only for our own well-being, but perhaps for the well-being of humanity in general, and of course the planet, because the planet is counting on us, for us humans, to get it together and learn how to live in a way that's in greater harmony with each other and with the earth. And in that place of learning to communicate in a more effective way, things just go a lot more smoothly. But as you know, just having happy thoughts isn't quite enough. It's got to be a bit more than that to get there. And sometimes it could be a little hard to get to a place of balance and equanimity so we can get to that place, unless we deal with the inner demons inside of us that perhaps get in the way of us doing that. For example, what I mean is, let's say you're in a situation where someone says something that's very triggering for you. Well, it might be hard to respond with compassion and kindness, because really what you want to do is probably, like, you know, maybe get angry or take a little jab or, you know, who knows? You know, that would be, that's kind of, usually that's how the ego responds, because when the ego feels it all threatened, it oftentimes goes into defense mode. So in order to get to the place where we can have a more compassionate interaction, really what needs to happen is those inner triggers, the things that set us off have to get resolved internally so that we can get to the next place. So it's not to say that, you know, if you really do practices that awaken compassion and you move triggers, you won't ever be activated again. Well, no, that's not really what the human boogie is. It's just learning to manage those emotional states a little more mindfully so that it becomes easier to do that. So, you know, when you start to clear your old triggers away by different kinds of methods, then it becomes, then when things that look similar show up, you're less likely to get set off, and you can see it for what it is. You might say, oh, this looks like when I was betrayed by my best friend when I was in fifth grade, and instead of layering all the angst you might still have had from that event on top of the current event, you can treat it with the proper amount of energy instead of piling a bunch of meaning and projection on top of it. So now we're talking about it more as a kind of a psycho-emotional transformation that can occur, but there's so many different layers to it, and because we are, you know, humans are very complex beings. You know, we have so many layers to ourselves. So one thing that's very important to me has to do with integration of body, mind, emotions, and spirit. How do we address all those aspects? Because I find that when people really focus on one or the other, they can get to some sort of excellence, absolutely, in that arena. But when we approach things from all angles, we become more well-rounded, and so there is more possibility for the different parts of ourselves to assist the other part. So, what do I mean by that? So, for example, I'm really interested in doing transformative work that combines the sensation, awareness of sensation, so let's say that's body, with the mind or our thoughts about things and our feelings. And how do we use those things, how do we contact those different parts sort of simultaneously? And when we work, what I find is when we work from these different perspectives simultaneously, a larger shift can happen, which can be quite remarkable. And you might think of looking from these different angles a bit like a more 3D approach, or moving beyond like looking like a flat picture and getting a more three-dimensional image of what's going on. So being able to perceive things more holographically, if you will. So
wait a minute, Sylvia. Would you explain that a little? Give us an example of something like that.
Yeah, the example I want to give is the three wise men and the elephant. So one would feel the trunk and says, oh, well, you know, the blind man says, oh, well, it's long and wrinkly, and someone else feels the foot and, you know, oh, it's large. You know, like everybody has a different perspective, but if you take all the perspectives together, you're more likely to get a more complete picture of something. So when you view an energy complex, an idea, a situation from sensation, how you feel in your body, which often leads us to emotion, because emotion is you know, it might be angry, sad, whatever it is, but oftentimes we experience that on a body level. So how do we look from that body level emotional experience, and then how do we look at our belief, the story we made up about how reality works based on experience. So that might be people always leave me, no one cares, and like whatever your storyline is, right? So we can take and view the storyline, feel the emotion, get into the sensation, and then call on our spirit for transformation. something really miraculous happens that I'm thrilled about, because I really feel that we are coming into a time of a new humanity, that each person becomes more integrated, and ideally as a human species, we become more integrated, because that for me is the goal, is how do we find common ground within our own being and with all beings. That's what really it.
Yeah. I'm reminded finding common ground is interesting. This morning we were having breakfast and we're talking a couple of different generations here. So three women who are older and a young man who's in his 30s who insists that he is an adult because he's in his 30s. And he's very, very rational, logical. He's into archaeology and geology. And for some reason, he just seems to think that the scientific, quote unquote, the scientific method is the only truth. And his mother, on the other hand, is a Unitarian Universalist minister who, despite the fact that she's been an atheist for many years, is now talking about experiences that she has had on a spiritual level. So I'm not quite sure how that relates to her atheism. And, you know, I tend to go more the woo-woo direction, where spirit is prime in my life, and then you've got one more person who's in between all of that. The young man was definitely not concerned. I was talking a little bit about the body linguistics class that I'm doing and how soul gives us a message and we often aren't enlightened enough to get that message, so it comes down to an emotional level, and we often aren't even aware enough emotionally or in tune with our own emotions to be able to figure out what that message is, so things come down to a physical level. And you can also, it's like a telephone line, it can go both directions. The work that you do on a physical level can impact the emotional and the soul level. And his response to that was, it's all a bunch of crap.
Exactly. Well, you know, and that's the thing, there's so many different views on it, and I feel like for me, I actually have a very sort of postmodern hit on it all. You know, like I have my own, spiritually speaking, I have my own spiritual practices that I do. And but I'm very, I actually have learned from many, many spiritual traditions, as well as the fact that I love science. I love it. And I love logic. I love things that can be made concrete. What I really want is results. So whatever I do spiritually, emotionally, whatever, I want to see physical results. So I have a sort of a strange approach where I apply a little bit of scientific method to my spiritual healing work, because I need tangibles to know that there is something shifting, and that's what I go for. But I really feel like one thing that really interests me is, how do we find, like I was saying, the common ground? How can we integrate all the parts? And if people have a my way is the only way mentality, it's extremely challenging to get there. But if people are like, well, you have your way and I have my way and they have their way, well, there, we have a little bit of head ground. We can make some headway there, because at least there's an openness. Now, some people may think this sounds completely blasphemous. I'm going to go for it. I'm also a hypnotherapist, and what I have learned is that the mind speaks, the psyche speaks in metaphors, and religion is a metaphor. It's a system. It's a way to understand something that our puny human minds cannot get around, you know? It's a context. And everybody has their different contexts they get to. Sometimes they get to it through their family of origin. Sometimes they get to it because they had joined a church, or various different reasons. So we all have these various contexts. But in the context of the psyche, it's just looking for a symbol so it can find a way to work with it. So the way I think of it is more like there's a prima materia. There's a basis that we all share, or there's, maybe it's pure energy. Maybe we call it the universe, whatever it is. But we are all putting our filters on it. And I believe that truth is not systems and their methods. The truth is what you get when you practice those things. And this is where I think creates a lot of confusion, is people are addicted to systems and needing to prove their system is right, instead of understanding that there's something ineffable that's larger that fits it all, but we're putting our filters on top of it.
Oh, that's perfect. I agree with you totally on that. And everybody has their own truth, so it's not as though there is a universal truth. There is a truth.
The only truth is your truth. And I think the one truth is love.
Well,
I think the one truth is the things that we can agree on. Love is a good thing. Truth is a good thing. Freedom is a good thing. Those things are the truth. The things that make us go, give us a sigh of relief. It's the states of being that are more enlightened states of being. And there are millions of ways to get there. And it's very individual.
Yeah.
Very individual.
I agree. And this is a good time to bring Chris in. Chris is
wonderful.
On the line with us. Chris, you made it. Hi. Yeah. My apologies for not getting back to you quicker. I've been off of internet for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Glad you finally got with us. So I'm sure you've been hearing a lot of what Sylvia is saying. So I'd like you to jump in with our conversation, but I also want to then go back to find out a little bit more about who you are and your passion and how you discovered it. So,
I kind of missed what you're talking with Sylvia.
Okay.
So,
all right, that's okay. Let's just
start online. So I'm not sure what topic you were on.
All right. Well, let's just start with you then, and
okay.
and tell us about who you are and a little bit about you and how you discovered your passion and what your passion is, and then we'll all join in the conversation together. How's that?
Okay, great. Well, I'm Chris Stanis, and I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom Foundation, and I originally founded our conference in 1993. So we're going into our 22nd year for our conference for women. And so that turned out to be my passion. It came to me through a series of events that just led me down that path that showed me what my purpose was to be and all that. So through various spiritual avenues of like workshops and things, I remember a first workshop at Seattle Unity Church where we were to write down our mission, and I wrote down to bring people together. And I didn't really know what that would look like. And then another workshop was a very amazing man, Danan Perry, where we were blindfolded in a room of 500 people, a very crowded room with lots of chairs, and we were to walk around and then link up with somebody. And he had us face each other and share what our purpose was. So we did, and then the other person was to repeat that back. And for me, I think because I was blindfolded, it just felt like the voice of God. It so resonated in me that I knew it was to be what I'd be doing, but I still didn't know what it was going to look like until I think it was a couple years later, where after reading The Feminine Face of God by Sherry Anderson and Patricia Hawkins, just a wonderful book, a compilation of many different women's spiritual trainings of a variety, Native American, Buddhist, Christian, and I just loved their stories, and I thought, oh, they would be great to bring women like these to Seattle with a speaker program at Seattle Unity Church. And so, but then it immediately came in, this is one of those clear moments when it just resonates, and I just said, no, you need to have it be a week-long event so that you would create community. So that's how it started. And we thought I got a group of women together. The ministers of the church at Seattle Unity Church said, yeah, go for it. And we were just planning one conference, not knowing what this was to be. And it's, 22 years later, so it's very spirit-led because it has a life of its own. No matter what we do, Women of Wisdom exists. So it's been quite a journey with it. It's evolved over the years. But it was, for many, many years, probably about 14 years, it was 9 days long. And so we could really immerse ourselves in the divine feminine and explore the woman's spirituality, which I think is a huge umbrella of any topic of interest to women. And now it's like a 4-day conference, but it still has that same energy of women coming together. And it's been a place where women share their stories. That's, I think, from day one, I noticed that. And with that comes healing, as women can talk and share with each other in a very safe environment.
That's awesome. And you also developed this chrysalis leadership. Is that coming out of the Women of Wisdom, or is that something separate?
Yeah, it's separate for me. It's me taking what I've learned over the 20 years of and wanting to bring, because I set up a different type of leadership. We became our own nonprofit in 1998, and then in 2003, I changed from it being a structure of me being the executive director and created a circle leadership model, and that came through some meditative work and from a retreat. And so since then, for the last 10 years, we've been operating. The organization is run by a council, and so it's about shared leadership and sharing the responsibilities. And so what occurred to me a couple of years ago was wanting to bring this to others, and particularly to organizations or companies that are looking for a different way. I think everybody's looking, but a lot of companies, they don't know how to do things differently. We're sort of trained to do that hierarchical, patriarchal way of the top down, and you do as the boss says. And this is about sharing and co-creating your vision and mission, and co-creating solutions to issues, and creating talking circles in an environment that's not used to that, but where people can then feel ownership for the work that they do and feel a part of a company and sharing in that. And then there's more buy-in from them and more productivity and more satisfaction at the workplace. And because a lot of people, I think, are leaving, especially women, leaving corporate life because it's not very fulfilling.
Right, yeah. That's awesome. You know, I was transcription supervisor at a hospital in Eastern Washington. And one of the things that we were working with was called the plane tree philosophy. And they had plane tree workshops that would go on. And it would bring together employees from the hospital from every level. There'd be somebody from the executive team. There'd be doctors, nurses, janitors, people from the kitchen, people in clerical work. It was an attempt to mix up everybody, basically to learn to listen to each other and to respect and honor each other, that just because somebody's a janitor and somebody's a doctor doesn't mean there's nothing in common. So, Sylvia, some of what you were talking about is finding a commonality between people so that there can be an honorable working relationship in this particular case that honors each other and respects each other and comes together trying to learn from each other instead of one thinking that they're better or worse or less than the other people.
Exactly. And socially and moving into these work models. And Chris, I'm very excited to hear that you're taking this out into the world, because the old hierarchical structures are very disempowering for those beneath it often, unless it's done really well. I actually have a question for you. Do you run your business on a consensus model, or what sort of model do you use for decision making?
At Women of Wisdom, we use consensus, and that doesn't mean it's unanimous, although many, many times it is, because we're just of like mind. But it's a sort of agreement model of if one person disagrees, they're willing to go with the group if that's a decision. And that's, it happened very rarely, but we do a thumbs up for a yes and a thumbs down for no. We're voting on something, and then we have one that's sideways, which just means I have some questions, I need some clarity, and it means we still need to talk through some things, and then usually that person can get to a yes. And it's a great way to define, okay, what's not clear yet? What questions haven't we asked yet and all that? So that's a model we use, and a lot of this we've developed out of Christina Baldwin's book, Calling the Circle.
Yes.
She has the way of circle now too, and so that's some great tools in there of what to use. So
Yeah, and I feel that that's a model that, you know, I've been a part of a number of organizations that use consensus model, and I think that it can be really a powerful community builder. Some people complain that it's slow and it's cumbersome, but hey, you know, if we want to change society, you can't imagine that it's going to be a quick fix.
And it also, empowers everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it allows you to really think through things. And really, a lot of times in the old model, it's focusing on the product. And this focus brings the process into play, too, that the process is just as important. And I find it when you co-create like that, it gets more – I can come in with an idea and think I know what this looks like, but just bringing the idea into the group, and then there's a big discussion, and everybody puts their creative hats on, something better comes out of it than what I ever imagined.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's one thing we were touching on earlier, is that when you look at things from a number of different perspectives, you get a holographic perspective, which is going to give you a clearer picture than just a one-angle lens. Because humans in general, like we, you know, we're very assumptive. You know, it's like there's the thing that we're focusing on that we might be seeing clearly, but our mind can really only focus on one thing at a time. So it assumes everything else around you, you know. but we make believe that it's all right, and we understand what it is so that we don't go crazy, you know. So being able to getting clearer perspectives from a number of different angles actually helps us to overcome some of the make rights that our brain does.
Yeah, so some of what you just said is – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, I was just commenting on the assumptions, because that can happen – And our minds do that. We just make assumptions, and when you start to ask a question, you realize, oh, that wasn't what they were saying at all.
Right. And you don't know unless you get the feedback of it. And that's part of the beauty of doing things from a group perspective, is that you can really get a chance to really understand what's going on, instead of being, okay, this is what you do, now just do it. And that doesn't actually lead to productivity, you know, because people begin to thwart themselves or doubt themselves or feel less than, so that they can't actually rise to their highest equation.
Right.
Yes. And I think part of this is using, coming with a curiosity rather than assuming you know all the answers, or you know how this should turn out, or even knowing that you know what the group's going to say, is to come in with questions and curiosity, which allows for other viewpoints to come forward.
Yeah, so absolutely essential. I feel that, and curiosity just across the board, it's like it helps to maintain a beginner's mind. And inside a beginner's mind, we can open up to so many things. If you come in assuming that, you know, like I said, if you come in assuming that you know everything, your mind isn't going to be open to receiving the other data. But in situations where that's how it's done, that's what's going on, there's less to wade through in terms of one's internal process, and also just being able to get present and actually hear it.
Sylvia, you said something that I want to bring back to, because I think it was pretty right on about how we live life, and something about our belief and pretending that we know what's going on, pretending that we even know what we think, never mind what somebody else thinks. So it's that, again, Chris, it's that assumptive living that we do, but it's also pretending that we have a clue, really, instead of being open to being curious about anything.
Yeah, well, it might be pretense. I don't know. Sometimes for a lot of people, they actually really believe it, but they just don't know that they don't know that they don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if they're really ensconced in it, you know. So, you know, but it's more like, how can we encourage people to be open? Well, part of that is to be open ourselves and not be, like, how do we interact in a way that doesn't say judgment but ask really good questions. And I feel that part of the answer for good communication or transformation is, how instead of do we have the answer, how do we have the questions? That's the question.
Yeah.
That's
right.
It.
You know, one of the things that I discovered when I really like, when I discovered Unitarian Universalist churches, was the fact that they have the children's religious education, and their goal in that is to teach children how to question, to not accept something that's said because it's a person of authority, somebody who's older than they are, something that's written in a book, something that they hear or see written on the subway or whatever that it is, but to actually question everything, including what they think they believe. And it just, it's a wonderful way to be brought up, is to because I wasn't brought up that way. I was brought up told this is what, for instance, a Baptist background, that this is what this verse means, this is what it says, and this is what you're to believe, and this is how you're to behave, and to go to something where children, not just adults, but children are taught to question, I think is so fabulous.
I think another thing that would be really useful to teach is the value of paradox, of understanding paradox.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, we've been, you know, in the sort of scientific method, there's a right and a wrong. But in fact, when it comes to sociological models or how to react with one another, or more like human concerns rather than, you know, if this and this equals two, you know, like that kind of question, you know, and being in that, if you're in that place, and I lost my train of thought. Come back around. Okay. Oh, wait, I'm human. It's Mercury retrograde.
Paradox.
I'll go with that. No, you go ahead, and it'll come back to me, whatever I was going
it's
there.
It's that the paradox, even the paradox.
The paradox. Thank you for bringing me back around. So, yeah, so being, yay, at least we've got friends, so we can remember paradox. So the great thing about, if we understand that paradox exists, therefore we can accept that there doesn't have to be one truth. And that's part of the beauty of it, is that multiple truths can be true simultaneously because truth is subjective.
Right.
You know, so much of it is.
And that's where that young man this morning was having difficulty, because he has a scientific background and considers himself quite intelligent. I mean, he is intelligent. I don't question that at all. But the whole thing was, it has to be that scientific method, and that is, quote unquote, the truth.
Well, and the thing is that how do things change when, depending upon who they're being observed by?
Yeah, right.
You know, and so, you know, there's a certain amount where on a sort of a nuts and bolts scientific level, yes, there is some truth to what he's saying, but life is so much more complex than just things that can be proved with scientific method. I mean, at one point, astronomy and math were considered magic.
Right.
So it basically, things that then they create a way, a tool to measure it, then it becomes science. So basically, math is unmapped science. Magic is unmapped science. So this is one of the unmapped science, is the science of the intersection of truth inside of the container of paradox. You know, how do you know?
Let me get Chris back in here. Hey, Chris, when you're doing your consensus group meetings and also your leadership, how does that relate, that what we're talking about with the paradox and somebody saying that only the scientific method is the truth, and other people are saying other areas like spirituality, for instance, not religion, but spiritual experiences could be a truth. Does that enter into what you do at all?
Not too much, because we are kind of a spiritual group. So we come from that core of our connection as a woman and spirit. And so we don't get into that so much of the science. But I know I interview a lot of people on my radio show. And recently I just had Sondra Baird, who has a book of The Secret of Ourselves. And, you know, I think science is starting to connect with what the spiritual community has been saying all along, and now science is starting to prove that. Because the more we learn, the more it connects with the spiritual realm. Is, you know, this is like the heart map talks about. We always think our brain is, you know, our main function in our body and how we operate and think and how we take things in, and yet they've done studies where the heart takes it in faster than the mind does, and electromagnetics and all that. And so they're starting to prove all these things that we have felt from in a spiritual sense all along. So it's starting, it's more like science is catching up.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful? It's so exciting. And one of the things that HeartMath talks about that I think is so interesting is that the heart is a huge magnet. It's got a huge magnet. It actually has just it's electromagnetically charged. It's the electromagnetic center of our heart. Fascinating, fascinating work that they're doing.
Yes, and so many other people too. And there's so many new books coming out, and it's just exciting research. And I'm in another group that we do a lot of healings, and a lot of our work is kind of, you start to see, we've been doing for 20 years, and you start to see science catch up too, because, you know, healings aren't always defined by, science of measurable, but you get the results. You know, why do people go into remission with cancer? How come tumors are reduced? And all that is unexplained.
You know,
it's interesting, too. Sorry. It seems to me that cancer particularly is incredibly responsive to energy and consciousness change. And I've seen it over. I've seen numerous spontaneous remissions from cancer. And absolutely, what an amazing miracle to be in the presence of it, I just have to say. It's incredible.
Yeah, and
it's interesting. Someone makes that shift.
Yeah, and you never know which way it's going to go. Some people don't have remission, and some people do. And Sondra Bear talks about that, how the cells respond to our thoughts and our beliefs, and there's so many mysteries there.
And they all somewhat have to coincide. I know there are people who, when I'm teaching Reiki, one of the things that I'm talking about with people is there is a big difference between cure and healing. Somebody can be healed, but not necessarily physically cured. And the healing,
you're talking about like on a psycho-emotional, spiritual level as opposed to a physical?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what happens. But, you know, this is an interesting topic. All of what we're talking about was conversation at breakfast this morning. And one of them had to do with a member of this congregation where the woman is minister who is in the end stages of cancer. And this minister is, she's, like I told you, she came from a Lutheran background, and then she became a Unitarian Universalist minister, and then she went to atheism, and now she's recognizing that there are some spiritual experiences that have been happening in her life. So where that's taking her, I don't know. But her biggest concern is that some people have come across a kernel of an idea that,
wow.
Did we lose her?
Yeah, we seem to have lost her. Kernel of idea. Well, we'll go with that. Yeah, healing is the power of healing is incredible when people are able to bring together all the parts. That's one of the things that really interests me, is how when people become a more unified front, big transformations are more likely to occur, because I feel a lot of it has to do with inner alignment. And that's my experience of it, is like when, for example, someone might be like, I want to be a rock and roll star, but on the inside they have tremendous fear of going up on stage. You know, the likelihood that that's going to happen, not as much. So, you know, how do we become aligned internally within ourselves? How do we become aligned in our organizations? And how do we become aligned as humanity in general? How do we bring those parts together? I'd really love to hear what your ideas about, you know, social change and how bringing the parts together might bring about more social change.
Well, I believe it starts with us, that, and you hear this all over, that some of the work I do is about women learning to find that respect for the feminine within themselves, that to really, because we've been programmed from a very young age to not respect ourselves as female, because the world doesn't out there, and I think it's going to reflect out there and the circle change until we inside totally accept the feminine.
Right, sort of like life as a mirror.
Yeah,
I think it's really important. And I think that the other thing that I've been really interested in recently is the whole thing of, for women particularly, about the whole good girl phenomena. Like being socialized and trying so hard to be good to the point where we're not being true to ourselves and what we really believe. And how do we moderate between, you know, yes, we want to be good, but when is good getting in the way of awesome? You know, when we're trying to be good for someone else or some idea, something that's external. And that's part of what it takes, I think.
Yes, and it's about wanting so to be liked.
I'm sorry, this is Jan. I just wanted to let you know that I'm back on. I'm not online. I had to call in on the phone.
Yeah, well, we got to then.
Well, we're technical difficulties, you know, Mercury retrograde and all that stuff.
It's in full swing. What were you saying, Chris? I missed that.
Okay, this is Jan. Can you hear me?
We were talking about the mirror and a woman. I've lost my train of thought.
Well, we're in full Mercury retrograde experience here, and this, people, is what it looks like. If you were wondering,
yes,
this is what Mercury retrograde looks like.
That would be how women are coming into their own.
All right, let me see. Can you hear me? No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Hello, everybody. I'm back on. I was trying to talk to you, and I had my sound on mute, so you couldn't hear me. So I'm back. And it is Mercury retrograde. My internet went down again, so I'm back on via telephone. Hi. Hello?
We're here.
Can you hear me? Okay, good. So I interrupted your conversation. I just wanted to let you know I'm back. Go ahead and keep talking.
You all were discussing how women are coming into their own these days.
All right.
And the other piece you missed is just about like moving beyond the place of good girl. Like being good inside of yourself, like being good for yourself and good for what you believe in the world, but not being good in the ways that you've been told to that get in the way of your greatness. How do we manage that?
Yeah, and I think women are really, they're learning that, you know, step by step. I mean, I think that's why groups of women are really important to be with. Like at Women of Wisdom, we have a committee that plans the conference and the council that runs the organization, and there's these circles of women. And I'm seeing over the years, as they stay with it, how their voice gets stronger and they're more empowered and they're developing their leadership skills. And then they're going out more in the world to do that in their regular life, you know, in their families, in their jobs, and making those changes. And seeing where they have sabotaged themselves or where they have sold out in the sense of doing it for others rather than for themselves, or because they want to be loved, they want to be liked, and they don't want to women don't want to make waves, we don't want to cause conflict. And I think we're starting to get out of our skin about that. We're starting to realize, especially as we get older, we don't care as much if people are going to react to it. And so, as like Jean Shinoda Bolen talks about, it's going to be the women over 50 that change the world. And we were just talking about that the other day, and younger people are getting involved too, but think of the tipping point of how many women there are over 50, and there's going to be more and more.
Dalai Lama said that the Western women will transform the face of the world. That's a paraphrase, but it's women that will change society. And I really believe that's true. It's not like, I'm not anti-men at all. It's just the time for women to come forward is here. And that I think that it's time to be able to help each other and encourage each other to stand up and come forward and offer the change that you're here to offer. And I feel that for those of you women out there who have never gone to an all-woman event, I really recommend that you check it out, because there's something qualitatively different about the experience of sharing with a group of all women about what it is to be a woman than it is to do that in the context of everyday society. There's another level of self, being able to see yourself in others and be seen by others in such a way that you can get more leverage on your transformation. I think it's important.
Oh, yes, and I think we just did a Sacred Pampering Day for Women last weekend, and it's a fundraiser we've done for our organization. The last one we did was about 10 years ago, but I remember being in with a group of young, I think they were still in high school, and this girl was in tears because she never had the experience of being just with women and seeing how powerful that was. It was moving to watch her experience that. That was an eye-opener, like, oh, wow, you know, look what I can get from being around all women. Because there's also the competition and there's the distrust and look at the bullying that girls do in school.
Right.
And that competition, that scarcity feeling like, well, there's not enough, and so I've got to fight, you know, I've got to fight for. I think it's ingrained when we're younger, is like you were taught to, even if it was unconsciously, to fight for the men, you know, to find the boyfriend, that you got to be the most beautiful and the most this and the most that. And
exactly.
I think we're
taught
to compete.
Has any work been done with girls, young girls, like either elementary or middle school age, when they come into that really strong competitive time? And there's the cliques that happen, you know, and the like you said, the bullying that goes on, and a lot of it has to do with attracting a boyfriend. Has any work been done with that age group?
Oh,
well,
absolutely.
I know there's been, I'm sure there is, and I've seen more with high school, and we're wanting to work with some teens, and I'm thinking to go more in the junior high level so you catch it before they get to high school.
Yeah, you try to get it early, and then you can save so much. But it's just so painful what young girls go through, or what well, kids in general. I mean, I have a friend who is an elder in the spiritual community I was a part of, and he said if I had to choose between being an adolescent and eternal death, I'd choose eternal death, because it's hard being those ages. That is challenging, you know. So, you know, just as much as we can support our young ones, because as we know, as grown women, those years are so formative, and then we carry them our entire lives until we can unburden ourselves. So what if we just cut to the chase and got to our girls quicker? I think that is important.
Yeah, we need to, and I know that's one of our pushes, too, is for why I talk about women stepping up and being leaders and have their voices be heard. It's that it's important for us to be visible for the young girls to see women are powerful, women have a strong voice, an important voice, and we need to display that for the world to see. We need to get out there and have the young girls at really young ages know that.
And there is a lot of strength and power in numbers. As we come together, like individually, it's easy to feel disempowered. The system's so big, oh, I'm a woman, oh, this, or whatever it is. But when we come together in a unified way, that there's not much that can stop us. But it just requires coming together and really believing in that and then doing something with it. Because I feel like there's a lot of beautiful talk in spiritual communities and compassion, but what's really interesting to me is how do we get people all the way from having compassion to getting to compassion in action?
Right.
That's what really
interests me. I was wondering too: is there on the Women of Wisdom and any other conferences, women's conferences that are out there, is there anything for younger girls to be able to attend, or do they have to be a certain age before they can attend? I don't know.
Yeah,
but you don't see it so much at conferences I've been to. We do have, we allow 12, 13-year-olds and up to attend, and we have had like one day out of the conference have a special teen day, and we had that for years, and it was set up by another organization, an organization that ran teen programs, and when they had to stop and we were doing it ourselves, it was hard for us to get the teens, and it's teens are so busy now. It's important. You almost have to go where they are. So that's why we're starting to, we're going to go to some schools and offer our programs at schools where the teens are. In fact, we did do that. We had one of our council members do that because she was working in a school, and she had a, it was an alternative school of predominantly African-American girls, and they had, it was actually a course on one day a week for 2 hours that they could sign up for, and so it was actually part of the school's curriculum. And the other teachers were one, and it was really just a talking circle, a safe place for those these girls to talk and share. And the other teachers were, wow, what are you doing? These girls are changing. And they all wanted to come back the next year. It was just very empowering. And we're kind of, we're wanting to bring that back. I know there was a Woman of Wisdom, not connected to ours, but it's a school in our area that had a three-week mandatory class for girls when they started high school. And it reduced the level of both. I'm sorry, what?
Did you say mandatory class?
Yeah, it was mandatory, and they had a three-week class, and it was to build trust and self-respect for each other, and it reduced the level of bullying in the school by a large margin. And then we did an event there with them. It was a conversation cafe. We had adults from the community come in, so it was one-to-one. We had conversation cafe style with the girls and the women sitting around a table, you know, talking about what does it mean to be a woman and everything. And one of the girls was saying, so this is high school, and she was saying, oh, we just went and visited this junior high to talk to them about the Woman of Wisdom. She was so excited, and I thought, "What? How perfect for them to teach what they've learned to the young girls."
That's awesome.
And someone else is doing some really potent work with girls is the Girls Leadership Institute, Rachel Simmons. So something to look into. There are organizations where this is going on, and she's one of the vanguards there. So I think it's important that we look to build that for the women of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And,
they start out
with the skills.
On the Women of Wisdom or any of the circles for girls, and particularly like the mandatory one, is there something similar for boys as well?
Well, the event that we did with the Conversation Cafe, a friend of mine, he did it with the boys, with the men from the community came. So they met in the gym and we met in the cafeteria. And but as far as, I don't know that there was a teen group for the boys in the school. And I don't know if they've continued it. The school's changed and all. It was a couple years ago, but it was an exciting event. I loved it, and I've actually thought about creating something and going to different schools and doing this.
Yeah.
And it was really wonderful for the women in the community and eye-opening to see what those girls are going through.
Well, I think it's so amazing because in a community that I'm a part of, every year they have rites of passage for the young men and women. And it happens in the context of a larger week-long event. And when it's time for their initiation ceremony, they come into these costume people with drums and things come into the dining hall, and they cover them with a cloth and take them away, and everybody in the room practically is like weeping and cheering because it's because of them, but we missed out on that. So many of us, we didn't have the opportunity to say, okay, now we're officially making this transition and we're being honored in that transition. And what I find it's so powerful to witness the young people coming up with all their power and strength in the communities, but also to witness, it's a little bittersweet to witness the adults and what they go through when they're witnessing that occurring,
mm-hmm.
because that's something missing. So,
changing
society. Changing society. We start these flows, and before you know it, that's just going to be that's going to be how it's done. You know, or it'll be the more initiations. Like I'd love to see society get to that point where that's normal, and it not happening is being abnormal. So, but transitions matter. Marking transitions matters.
Yeah, they do. Are there any? Have either of you come across or designed, created particular transitions, like you were talking about this rite of passage ceremony that happens, with some ideas that can be perhaps offered to different communities that they could do for their young people who are coming of a certain age?
Oh, there's so many out there, absolutely. And I have actually helped to orchestrate some things like that. My daughter created her own rites of passage, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. But she's the kind of person who, she's her own go-getter, you know. It's like she's going to do something, she's going to do it her way, and I admire that about her. So she did a two-day silent retreat, and then when it was over, she came down out of the cabin, out of the woods, she stayed with a little friend, and they came down the hill and met the group of women, and what we did, what she designed was that she marked all the women with ochre, which is a red clay, and all the women sat, and all the women and girls who had already begun their periods sat and talked about what it was to be a woman for them and what it was like when they transitioned into that. And the girls talked, and the girls who hadn't gone there, who at the ceremony, because they were allowed there too, talked about what it was to be a young woman and what they thought it might be like to be a woman. And then my daughter jumped across the fire from the girl's side to the woman's side. And that was the way she did it, which was pretty neat. But there's as many ways as there are people, and I think that would depend a lot upon the belief structures already in place in the family or in the individual, at least. So
I think it's really important for that kind of a conversation to take place. I remember when I was 24 years old and I lived in Eugene, Oregon, I'd go to the Fifth Street Public Market every Sunday morning. That was kind of my church, and I'd get a cup of coffee and sit around and watch people or read and think. And in one of those sessions, I remember thinking about relationships, and I thought about my own age and asked myself, how old are you? And the answer came back, now I was 24 chronologically, but the answer came back that I was 3. And my question to myself was, how can you expect to have an adult relationship with somebody when you're only 3 years old? So I went through this long process. It took a couple of years. I just gently allowed my inner self to age until it was the same age as I was chronologically. And every day or every week I would ask myself, how old are you today? And I remember rejoicing when I was 15. I thought that was very exciting, but I allowed it to be a natural process. But the other question that came up in that whole process was, if that's the case, then looking at some definitions, what is your definition of woman? And I was stunned when one of the definitions was you had to be 45 to be a woman, and I was 24. I said, this is crazy that you have to wait till you're 45 to be a woman, a real woman. And so I worked with that for many years, but I remember when I turned 45, I was very excited because now I truly was a full woman. So these are images. Where that number came from, I have no idea. But these are things that as children, we establish within our bodies and in our brains somehow because we don't know. Now, if there had been a rite of passage ceremony when I was a child and got to discuss what is a woman and how does it feel, that whole definition probably would have changed dramatically. So I think it's a very important conversation to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good point. Really good point.
Yes. Well, you know, we have a caller, and, well, I'm not sure that we do or not. Whoever it is didn't push that they were wanting to talk, but so I'll check. Oh, I know who it is. It's Sophia. Hi, Sophia. If you want to talk with us, well, you let us know, but I've got Sophia on here. So we have Sophia from Minnesota listening as well. So, ladies, what have I missed so far? What in our conversation would you like to address that we haven't done so far?
Oh goodness, I don't even know. I don't know. I'm blank slate, honey.
Yeah, really.
All right. Well, let me just interject here to the listeners. If you'd like to speak with Chris or Sylvia or me, you can call in. It's 347-205-9074. We're going to be on for a little bit longer, and then after the interviews, if you'd like to have a reading, I've drawn 4 extra cards. You're welcome to call that same number, 347 205-9074, and I'll be glad to do a reading for you. So
I do have a little thing I'd like to add on to what you were saying before, Chris, which is in my work with people, I'm very interested in where people get glitches in their timeline. So, for example, someone has some kind of psycho-emotional issue come up, and it's a repeating pattern that they have. So maybe it's self-sabotage or whatever it is. And oftentimes in a hypnosis session, I'll ask them, I'll have them contact the idea of it as it manifests as a sensation in the body, and then ask them, have them imagine it's a little you, and then ask them, how old is that self? And invariably, usually it's somewhere before the age of at least 12, but oftentimes it's these younger selves. It's almost as though when we have some kind of trauma happen or have some kind of thing that shakes us up, a part of us stays that age internally until we can interact with the beliefs and the emotions surrounding the experience of whatever happened at that age. And I find it's amazing to witness. And I find that what's really incredible is when we get to figure out the first time that whatever kinds of thing, like sabotage or I'm not lovable or whatever the story is, the first time, the whole train of traumas that relate to it can unwind themselves, particularly when you start with, when you get to the origin one. So that's some of my idea about why a particular age comes up. That's exactly how I do my work, exactly like that.
Well, you know,
yeah,
that's,
me
that's
too. I've been healing some people.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, sorry. I do healings on people, and that's often I try to get to the core of it, and I'll do the same thing, ask them what age they are, and invariably it'll be between 3 and 7, and
really?
A trauma will come up, because if you don't get to the core, these repetitive patterns keep recurring until you fully understand where it comes from. Now, sometimes you don't have to remember the actual event, but if you remember your feelings at that age, you can tap into that aspect of it, and then you start to clear it, because when you start to realize it now, like, oh, okay, this pattern come up again, you start recognizing it faster and realizing this isn't happening now. It's not what's just happening now. It's all tied into all the previous times. And when you get to that core one, it's like a trigger releases.
It's phenomenal. And I think that, you know, in modern psychotherapy, or maybe not quite as modern as us, but in modern psychotherapy, there's a belief that you must remember, you must have a cognitive memory. But before age 8, it's precognitive. You're not necessarily going to have a cognitive memory. And the body memory, the thing is the mind can lie. It can make up a story, but
right.
The body does not lie. So actually, mm-hmm. Sensation is a clearer way to get to truth than a mental story picture, from my perspective.
Yeah,
I believe that too, and I think there's, you know, memory in ourselves and in our body. And sometimes I remember doing an exercise with somebody where you're working with a partner and they touched a part of your body and it would give you that recognition of what is that body part saying? What happened here?
Mm-hmm.
And it unlocks and can unlock a memory too. Even if you don't
exactly.
know exactly what happened, it there's a sense of and I think it the most important thing is the attention to the feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
You know, ABC happened. Is what did you feel?
And if you think about children being brought up and going through supposedly the exact same situation, but each one of them perceives a difference in what that situation was because of how it affected them and their feelings, how they feel about it.
Perspective.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, interesting. Well, you know, Cindy brought up a point here that I'd like to share. When I said that I was 3 and that a woman was 45, I've never seen this before. She's the first one who's ever said this. I was 24 when I made that realization. She said 24 and 21 equals 45. And 24 minus 21 equals 3. So if you add or subtract 21 years from whatever age I was at 24, it came out with the 3-year-old and the 45-year-old. I never, ever would have thought of that. I have no idea why that seems profound, but it does.
Coincidence or profound, you decide.
Yeah, really, really. Okay, so we're gonna come back in just a minute and talk about anything else that you can think of that we might still need to talk about. But first of all, what I'd like to do is, and I'd like to start with Chris, is have you give us some contact information. And also, I know that you both are authors. So I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the books that you wrote and or that are in process. Tell us if somebody wants to contact you, how they should go about doing that, whether you have website, Facebook, email, et cetera. So, Chris, you get to go ahead and start with that.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of websites. Woman of Wisdom is www.womenofwisdom.org. And also my personal one is chrysalisleadership.com. And that's K-R-Y-S-A-L-I-S. And people can reach me at the email at wow@womenofwisdom.org is probably the easiest way. And also there's our Facebook pages are Woman of Wisdom and my name can be found, Chris Stainis, K-R-I-S, and my last name is S-T-E-I-N-N-E-S, so it's Facebook. I have a book called Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women, and it's a compilation of, well, the story of Women of Wisdom. I've written different parts of it. It's also has some of our talks from some of the great women we've had at the conference, Jean Houston, Marion Woodman, Frances Moore LePay, Angela Zarian, Jean Shinoda Bolen, Barbara Marks Hubbard, et cetera. And there's art and poetry and stories from participants. And so it's a nice combination of looking at the divine feminine from different eyes and different viewpoints. And so it's an inspiring book around for women. And if people are looking for this kind of, needing that inspiration with the divine feminine, it's a great book to have. It's kind of a book you don't have to read straight through. You just pick up a chapter and it's, I actually wrote it and this wanted to feel like you were going to a conference. And so people who've been to the conference, it's like I'm having a memory book. And for those who haven't, feel like they are going through a conference. So I just encourage people to get it or it's a great gift for a friend. And I am planning someday in the near future, when I get around to having time, a follow-up, the second book, because there's a lot more talks of Woman of Wisdom and more stories. And also, if people have writings about women's spirituality, stories about their lives, stories on the divine feminine, or art or poetry, they can send me an email, and I will contact them for when I actually get going on the second book. And so,
awesome.
Again, they can reach me at wow@womenofwisdom.org.
Okay. And Sylvia?
Well, the best way to reach me is I have three websites. One is my name, and so I'm going to have to spell it because my last name could be a little confusing for people. It's Sylvia Brallier, S-Y-L-V-I-A-B-R-A-L-L-I-E-R, sylviabrallier.com. That's kind of got, it's everything me, but then there's my school for somatic healing, body-mind healing, and that's shamasoma.com. It's called the Shama Soma Method. And then the Mystery School can be reached at tantricshamanism.com. So those are the websites. The books, Dancing in the Eye of Transformation is my sort of a metaphysical primer that talks about how to become a more integrated human being and apply creative consciousness towards your spiritual path. And then I wrote another book called Ancient Wisdom, Total Vitality, and it talks about a Taoist regime that seems to be magically curing people of all kinds of illness. You can find out about that at my Sylvia Brolier site. And some of the projects I'm working on, pretty excited about something that's it's so new that I just have a working title of someone I'm working with called Army of Good Girls. If you just go to that, armyofgoodgirls.com, and sign up. It's going to be a feminist network, a network for women to talk about women's empowerment and also to encourage women to network, and so that they can, you know, from an entrepreneurial sense, being able to get financially solvent, and then how are we going to help women in third world nations or women who don't have the resources that we have? So how do we pay it forward to the women who are really are subject to their reality? That really interests me. So that's one of the exciting little projects that's coming up, as well as I got several books, one related to that and another one that talks about methods for approaching and moving towards emotional intelligence in the way that you interact in the world. That's for everyone. It's not particularly for women. So those are the things that are up and coming in my world right now.
Awesome. That's great. Well, and I want to let everybody know, too, this is Jan, that there are two books coming up. One of them is called Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, and both Chris and Sylvia are in that book. It's a book of interviews with 26 contemporary women spiritual leaders. And that's going to be coming out in September/October. There's another book of interviews that I haven't really promoted very much. It's called Millionaire Women with Intuition. And this is interviews with women who have built millionaire businesses and use their intuition as a great part of that building. And it's really pretty fascinating. With both of these sets of interviews are amazing women. So I would encourage you to think about that, and I'll keep promoting that. So this is for this series that we're in right now is for the Feminine Spiritual Trailblazer series. Again, that'll be coming out September, October. And and I'll let you know more about that as we go along. So what else did we forget or that still needs to be said?
Just to say to everyone out there, thank you for listening, and I really hope that you will take all this information in, and there's something inside of what we shared that's helpful for you, that you can use it as a springboard for something new in your life. So blessings to everybody out there. That's what I want to say.
All right. Okay. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the show today and for sharing your insights and wisdom with us. And I look forward to seeing your books and seeing what else is going on in your lives again. So to all of our listeners, I want to say thank you for being with us and for sharing this time with us, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next week for week 5 in the series, Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers. And for now, I wish you soul blessings.
I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.